Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer is here. Joe Flacco is with the Colts. Life is good. We're recapping.
You sound a lot better than last week, dude.
I thought about this. So, like, I said this on the podcast, but for those of you who are just listening to that one and coming to this one and thinking, my goodness, what did I just do to myself? I was ripping down I-80 East. I had a flight to catch out to L.A., but we were committed to doing the pod. I was proud of it. I thought that producer Shelby did a great job. It was like found footage, basically. Like he had found that recording underneath like a treasure chest somewhere.
Did we have our Blades of Steel? This was the Blades of Steel episode, right? Like that I was think. So memorable for multiple reasons.
A lot of
Konami talk on that one.
A lot of Konami talk, which is great. I mean, listen, for me, that was the perfect scenario because I was out of good podcasts to listen to. I am kind of in an audiobook limbo and, no new music that I'm really excited about. And so I just got to talk to my friends for, an
pretty
hour
good.
And you guys had to listen to it. So,
and I can kind of hear you too.
it was like through the magic of Beats headphones. Thanks, Dr. Dre. We're through phase one of free agency, but really, I mean, we're through free agency. You know, everybody's waiting with bated breath for Mike Williams to take his visits. I'm sorry, but if that signing has any tangible impact on the 2024 season, I will.
All right. Can I push back for a second on that?
Sure.
Because, okay, so I do think there are still good signings left, and I do think that there are signings that we're not going to talk a lot about because they're not as exciting.
Like interior offensive linemen.
No, you know what it is, though, is like, so if you look, like a lot of the best teams in the league have feasted on the third contract guys, right? Like, so like the end of the Patriot dynasty, there were a ton of guys on their third contracts, right? The Patriots had picked up. Some of them had been there before and came back, like a Kyle Van Noy, like what the Ravens have done, right? The Ravens have absolutely gone wild as far as picking people out of this department, you know? And you look at it last year and some of the guys that were integral parts of their team, and it was, you know, Jadeveon Clowney, Ronald Darby started in the AFC title game. Kevin Zeitler was a third contract guy. Odell Beckham is a third contract guy. And so, like, I don't know. Like, I hesitate to say it's completely over because some of those guys are still sitting out there. You know, your Justin Simmons, your Xavier Howards, like the guys who are looking for a third contract who are either in their 30s or approaching their 30s. A lot of times those wind up being really good signings. And I remember talking to, you know, someone with the Ravens about this and why they do it. And his whole logic was like, generally, you know what you're getting because the guy is so far into his career. There's no faking it. And you know how he's going to handle money because he's already had money. And in a lot of cases, to make it that far and, you know, that long in the league, you have to be a leader. So he'll bring some leadership qualities too. So don't underrate what your team might do over the next couple of weeks. If they sign some guy who you think is all done and over the hill, just remember the Ravens started like five or six of those guys in the AFC title game. So it's not over yet. Michael Pierce was another one.
If I get the tweet, we should save this for posterity, by the way. Mm-hmm. Let's producer Shelby can tweet this out. If I get the post from at New York Jets this week, that's like, oh yeah, Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Odell Beckham, who's going to stop us? I'm going to be like, just get out of here.
The funniest one was the FanDuel one this week. Did you see that? Like last week?
No.
It was like how scary does the Panthers offense look after they signed? Who was it? Who they signed? Now I'm trying to remember. Oh, you know, it was too, they traded for Deontay Johnson, who like flat out quit on the team in December, right? Like flat out quit on the Steelers in December. And it was that signing that prompted them to tweet that about, like, all due respect, Adam Thielen, Miles Sanders, Deontay Johnson, I don't know, like Tommy Tremble or something, and then Bryce Young.
All the guys who are always available on your fantasy free agency waivers. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, wow, like who put together this tweet? Like that was my first question. I was like I know it says FanDuel, but there had to be a human being who put together this tweet.
There is that cottage industry, and there's the people who break the news. There's the news breakers on Twitter,
and there's the lineup this, people. The
and
lineup
there's
guy.
The people who rush to do the and there's got to be like old takes exposed or cold takes or whatever it's called needs to get on there and start culling these because it's like the same four people, and it's like, oh my God, Bradley Chubb, Jalen Ramsey, and Vic Fangio, get out of here. It's going to be unstoppable. The Dolphins are going to end up 9-7 and, you know, not make the playoffs. Like this is, it is, it's like, we know nothing. Most of these signings are completely worthless. And if the Jets, like, you know it's coming, right? Where the Jets will be, you know, Mike Williams, Odell Beckham. I lived through Flight Boys 1 and 2. Okay, so you can't tell me to get excited about this if it happens. Do you
Who
remember
the Flight Boys?
Okay, so Flight Boys 1
with Santonio Holmes and Braylon Edwards, maybe.
Santonio Holmes, talking about? Braylon Edwards, and Jericho Cotchery.
Okay,
and then Flight Boys 2.0 was Santonio Holmes, Plexico Burress, Derek Mason.
Because this is like Plexico Burress post shooting.
Plexico Burress, like 4 years out of prison. Yeah. Or three years out of prison. Yeah.
Like Derek Mason.
Who ended up quitting halfway through.
5 years
that
past his prime, I would say. Like a good 5 years past his prime.
He literally quit, like, or I think they cut him like six games in because it was such a disaster. Yeah.
He was a great player back in the day, too. He was like one of these like really gritty, tough, like inside receivers. Like I loved Derek Mason back in the day, but I had completely forgotten he was even on the Jets.
And there was this whole like, I remember back then, like, who's going to cover all of us? Most teams, actually. Yeah. Like, a lot
that
of
was
teams
like the area,
able to
that, that was yeah. like the era of the Jets where, like the core was starting to break apart, right? Of, like, the... And I know you could talk about this era of Jets until you're blue in the face, right? But...
And have.
Yeah, yeah. But that was, like, at the point where it was just, like, they were blatantly going for headlines. Like, they knew the usefulness of their core had kind of expired. And so they were at that point where every signing was like, oh my God, look at this big name going there. And then you remember that he's 3 years past his usefulness as a football player.
So they had Hard Knocks in 2010. And I went through, when I worked at NFL Network, I re-watched every episode of Hard Knocks. And I posted the greatest quotes out of context in the show's history. Mm-hmm. And I think it was number one was Mike Tannenbaum at the team's practice during that Hard Knock season going, look at Santonio Holmes. Who's the genius who signed that guy? And I was like, wow, you were.
Holmes
and
was actually a home run compared to some of the other guys, though. Like, I mean, Holmes actually played well in the playoffs for them.
Santonio Holmes had a couple, like a good stretch, and then was so bad that he was benched.
I think then they paid him, right? Was it that? Was that it? Like, they traded for him. He played like a year.
Yes.
Played for a year and had a great year.
Yeah.
And then they paid him and everything went off the rails. I think that's right.
And then after they paid him, they literally benched him during the decisive final drive of the 2011 season that they had to score on, I think, to even have a chance of making the playoffs.
And then like a few months after that, they had a press conference for the signing of Tim Tebow. Or no, trade. They traded for Tebow.
Yeah. So like I said, all these teams that are doing all this stuff, it works out.
I would watch like a multi-part documentary on Tim Tebow's time with the Jets if they put it out now.
I don't think I could possibly. You should,
I think you'd be like a good documentary maker for that.
You know what it is? It's like it would be like if you survived. What's the Italian city that got covered in volcano?
Pompeii.
Yeah.
Pompeii.
It would be like if you survived Pompeii and they were like, hey, make a documentary about Pompeii. Be like, no, I survived the Tebow season. No offense to the
one of my favorite memories from that, because I did come through there during training camp. I was at NFL Network then. I was a field reporter, and they were out in Cortland, New York, right? Is that right for that summer? That was one of the summers out there. And one of my most vivid memories for some reason is Sal Pal being parked there for the entirety of camp and doing live shots with Ray-Bans on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The definition Wayfarers. Of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And he would have Sal Pal, or he would have Tebow like right behind him in his live shot because the Jets allowed that for some reason. And
yeah, we had to, as B reporters, they used to cordon
off. Good
luck,
Mark.
They would cordon off practice when they would do the Tebow stuff. And so we'd have to watch like Sal's live hits to see if we saw anything. Yeah. And, you know, all this time I could have been, you know, like working on myself personally or reading or exercising or, you know, like taking my then girlfriend, now wife, out to lunch or something. But no, we gotta watch Sal Pal just in case we get a glimpse of the Tebow cat.
I mean, just like the amount of stuff that happened with that franchise from like 2008 when they traded for Favre to 2012, the Tebow year. I mean, yeah, like I said, you could do a documentary on the whole thing.
It was absolutely insane. All right. So much has changed since. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
The Jets have really grown from that. Yeah. Nothing weird going on with them at all. You know, like with fringe political, you know, not fringe, you know what I mean? Like a third party political candidate, vice presidency, you know, any of that kind of stuff. But yeah. So, wave one of free agency to me, it was defined by what the Steelers were doing. And I kind of interpreted, I know you and I felt a little bit differently about the Russell Wilson signing, but to me it was in phases, right? Where you sign Russell Wilson and I was like, that's a bad idea. You trade Kenny Pickett and I was like, that's an even worse idea. But now you get Justin Fields and to me it's like, okay, I see what you're doing. You have not lost anything on the draft equity front. You're putting two guys with everything to lose in that room together. And while Russell is the quote unquote starter, that doesn't mean that he will be by week five or week six, you know? And I think you've without a question upgraded your quarterback room and you put yourself in a position where, you know, when you have Mike Tomlin, you're never going to be bad enough to draft a guy that high. And so you've given yourself two different chances to hit on your guy for the next 3 or 4 years, which is smart. I thought that was
so.
It ended up being the move of free agency to me after,
but it didn't,
looking like a disaster.
But it wasn't like part of a plan, you know? And I love Mike Tomlin as a coach. He's like one of the five best coaches of the last 20 years in the NFL, right? Like, no question, he's in that category. He really kind of screwed this up. And I, like, Kenny Pickett deserves some blame too. Because he could have handled it better. But I think if you look at Kenny Pickett's situation, you can kind of understand it, right? Where he doesn't get anything but third team reps in the spring and summer of his rookie year. And then he gets thrown out there 5 weeks into the season, right? Plays okay, makes it through. Then, you know, going into year two, it looks like the offensive coordinator is a problem. They sort of waffle on whether or not they're going to keep him in the lineup. Then they fire the offensive coordinator, which, you know, like offensive coordinator's really been a problem for them since they fired Todd Haley. And Haley, for all of his problems, did a really good job there. His last 4 years, I think they were top seven in the league in offense. And so, like, there's this ongoing offensive scheme issue. You know, Kenny Pickett's dealing with, like, potentially getting benched for a lot of that period of time. And then, you know, first week of December, he gets hurt. Then the rumors come out, like, a month later that he refused to dress, which, you know, if you're him, you're probably miffed that that got out. I can understand why, where for Pickett, like, the trust would be broken a little bit with the team. And so, like, if you want to go back and you want to know what happened, right? On the Saturday night before free agency started, Tomlin called Pickett and said, listen, like, I don't know if it's going to happen. It probably won't, but there's a chance we sign Russell Wilson tomorrow. And if he's coming in, he's coming in, and it's going to be an open competition. And then the signing happens on Sunday, and then on Monday, Pickett and Tomlin talk. And Tomlin says to Pickett, okay, well, you know, Kenny, Russell is going to get the first snap and get the early reps with the first team, and it's going to be a competition from there. And that was when Kenny asked for the trade, which, I mean, I think as a result of the broken trust, right? Like, if you had been through what he had gone through the last 2 years, you might be a little tough on that too. You might, like, look at it like, this is not going my way. And so he asks for a trade. So it's a long way of saying, like, I think what happened in the quarterback room there over the last couple of years and where they stand right now, a lot of this is squarely on Tomlin now. And I know he wouldn't run away from the responsibility of that. He wouldn't run from the accountability for that. But that's sort of where it is now. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens because, you know, again, like you said, like the Steelers have a lot of leverage over both these guys. Like they can get rid of either of them at the drop of a hat. And so it's a really interesting situation to be in with one, you know, quarterback who has, you know, is at one point an MVP candidate and won a Super Bowl, but has had a really, really difficult 3 or 4 years. And then another guy who's got a ton of talent that hasn't been harvested yet.
I liked it because I feel like, I mean, and whether it was, like you said, I mean, it sort of evolved the way that it did and people's emotions got out of hand and however you want to say it. But I do think that there is sort of a necessary friction that did need to take place there because you allowed Ben Roethlisberger to stay like 3 years longer than he should have to the point where he was like lobbying the owner to just be able to like fall backwards every time he took a snap.
And that's where the offensive coordinator like situation started. Like they hired his buddy. You know what I mean? Like that's where like Randy Fichtner was his buddy and Matt Canada was Randy Fichtner's quarterback's coach.
Right.
So like the whole problem metastasized from that.
Yeah. And then you bring in Kenny Pickett and, you know, I am all for patience, letting a guy develop. I really do like Kenny Pickett. I think he'll be a good NFL quarterback. You know, he might end up having that kind of Geno Smith situation, right? Where he ends up finding the right spot a little bit later on in his career if he hangs with it. But, you know, you could not look at any Steelers fan in the eye and sell him as your starter or even a guy who might win the job after last year. It was impossible. And so you basically fumigate the building. Now, my argument and my gripe comes in when you say, we're getting rid of all the bad quarterback vibes. Here comes Russell Wilson, you know? And so, yes, I mean, I think that there's some, you know.
Yeah, because, but I think that I do think now I'll take the Steelers side on this. I think entry point's really important, don't you?
Entry like, point is important.
Yeah, and his entry point is way different than it was in Denver.
It's different. The one thing that I'll always say is that, and I think I said it last week too, was that Seattle was in the best division in football and they got rid of him.
Yeah.
Denver was then in the best division in football and they got rid of him. They're paying him not to be on the roster. And there is a reason for that beyond, I mean, the guy threw 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions last year. You know, that's good enough to hang on to. But there's a reason they didn't. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so can somebody figure that out in that period of time. And if anyone could, Mike Tomlin can. I mean, like we said, Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell were there, you know, and somehow everything was okay. So, you know, maybe he figures it out. Maybe he doesn't. But
I think you know who I think might be the most interesting figure in all of this, though, is Arthur Smith.
Yeah.
Because
he should have gotten Justin Fields in Atlanta last year. the trade deadline.
I mean, it is fascinating though, because you have if you look at Arthur's, you know, career arc, like one of the things he made his name on in Kansas in Tennessee was resurrecting Ryan Tannehill's career, right? And they were able to over the years adjust the offense for what they had. And that was going back to like when he was there under Munchak and they had Jake Locker and Matt Hasselbeck, and they were constantly able to adjust and adapt to whatever they had. And I would say even like stylistically, like is Marcus Mariota that far off from what, like he built an offense for Marcus Mariota, right? Is that like that far off from Justin Fields from a skill set standpoint? Fields is bigger, but like, I think you have to make some of the same accommodations for Mariota that you do for Fields.
I do think Fields has more of an upside as a thrower still.
I think he does too, but I think that there's some similarities in that, like the guy has built an offense for different types of quarterbacks. And so like I do firmly believe this. Like, and I think that confidence in his ability to do that probably got him in Atlanta. You know what I mean? Like he was too confident in his ability to do it. So it wound up where they didn't really truly address the quarterback position before he got fired, right? But like, I do think, like, as far as, like, what a guy has in his bag, like, I think, like, Arthur Smith's going to bring things to the table that will help them at the very least get answers on what they've got in Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. And maybe it's not much, but I don't think, like, scheme's going to be an impediment here, maybe the way that it was under Matt Canada.
What was your favorite move that wasn't this? What else did you
like
love
cross-league?
About? Yeah.
Yeah. I would say I really liked Houston going and getting Danielle Hunter. Because I think it's aggressively taking advantage of being in that window where you've got the quarterback on a rookie contract. And it was doing it with a player who I think still has plenty left. It's one of these third contract guys, so I think there's some certainty in what you're getting. Like, you know, like the guy is going to, he's not going to take his foot off the gas because he got paid, because we've already seen him playing on a big contract. And to put him opposite Will Anderson, right? Like, I don't think at any point in his career, correct me if I'm wrong, he's never been like the number two guy, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I remember having this conversation with somebody years and years and years ago about, like, one of the things that you want to be careful of in free agency was taking somebody's number two guy and projecting him into the number one role.
Right.
And I remember somebody called it to me, this is way back, but somebody called it to me the Alvin Harper problem. Right. Like, so, and this is going back to the 90s, and Connor, you may have been very little for this, but but in the mid 90s, you know, like for the first two Super Bowls of Cowboys won, Michael Irvin and Alvin Harper were the receivers. And Alvin Harper was fantastic, right?
Bad hairline.
And huh?
Bad hairline.
Yeah, bad hairline, great deep threat though.
Yes.
And so like he winds up parlaying that into a big free agent contract. Free agency was still new at the time. With the Buccaneers, and just fell off the face of the earth. And so, like, the premise here, that the Alvin Harper problem is, are you projecting somebody's number one to number somebody's number two to be a number one for you, right? Well, like, now, in essence, what the Texans are doing is they're taking somebody's number one and making him their number two, where the Vikings doing the reverse, right? Jonathan Greenard has this big breakout year in Houston last year opposite Will Anderson. Well, how much of that was because Will Anderson was on the other side, right?
Yeah.
Now you got a guy in Hunter going down there who's used to getting all the attention, right? And everything being geared to stop him. And now he's going to see more favorable matchups because Will Anderson's on the other side. So I really like that one. I think it was an effective use of the cap space that they have now in the situation that they're in, with all those young guys they have that are on rookie contracts. I wasn't as wild about the Joe Mixon signing, but I can understand why you do it after not getting Saquon Barkley. But I like their pursuit of Saquon Barkley too. Like, I think that would have made sense. They're one of the teams, like, I don't think it's good for everybody to sign a running back like that, but I think they were one of the teams that really was positioned to do something like that. So I think Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans deserve credit for really attacking the first offseason with C.J. Stroud and Trench as a quarterback.
I was hoping that they would finish closer to the top, and Derrick Henry was not an option for them, right? I mean, stylistically, it's just not going to work. But yeah. like maybe a Josh Jacobs or a Saquon Barkley. I was hoping that was kind of where they would have landed in their decision-making process. But you're right. I think I want to talk about not the Jets possibly signing Odell Beckham, but the fact that so I was at the combine when Joe Douglas did his press conference, and everyone was just, you know, that was the day that they cut Laken Tomlinson. And so everyone's like, how on earth are you going to fill three, possibly four spots on the offensive line with Aaron Rodgers before the start of the season? And I actually went back and I wrote, I think he could do it pretty easily. I went back and I looked at all of Douglas's time with the Eagles and the Ravens. There were multiple seasons where I think there was one draft that Joe Douglas was the head of where they got Ben Grubbs in the first round and Marshall Yanda in the third. Yeah. And those two guys ended up being like two of the best. I mean, Marshall Yanda ended up being one of the best players in Ravens history. Ben Grubbs had a really good, really long career. They did that a couple times with the Eagles too. I mean, I think when he was at the Eagles, they did Jordan Mailata, and there was maybe another really good interior offensive lineman.
He was gone for like Dickerson. He wasn't there anymore with Dick. No.
Would it have been like Stefan Wisniewski maybe or something like that? And so he had done it multiple times. By the way, you have, for those of you who aren't seeing Albert's computer, like there's some sort of an emoji issue with him right now.
I don't know what's going on. Yeah,
and like half the time when he talks, there's like a thumbs up that just goes over his head. Now,
I haven't seen the thumbs up, but I saw the balloons.
You've gotten like three of those. I love
producer Shelby's got to get on this. I don't know what's going on here.
I like the fact that Shelby, I don't think he's doing it, but I would like the fact that like he's
that would be great if he was just completely sabotaging me.
Trying to hold my ADD in check. I'd respect by just having balloons go up on the screen every now and then.
Yeah, I would respect it. I would respect it.
But I thought it was, you know, I thought, to get Tyron Smith, right? And this, I think.
Like $18 million for the three players, right?
Yeah.
Like base pay. Like, and obviously Tyron can make more than that. But yeah, you know, I dug around a little bit on that one, and I don't think it should go without notice that two of the guys came from Baltimore, which is Joe's roots.
Right.
Right. Like, so to go and get John Simpson and Morgan Moses,
who
from
you
the Ravens
had and you let
line.
Him go.
This was it's admitting he had made a mistake, yep. Right? It's trading for a contract that's affordable,
but
it's going and finding a guard who is a really tough physical player who can start for you. And I don't think they're necessarily done. Like, I think they very well could wind up taking one of the tackles at 10. So, like, I like the idea of throwing resources at this. And, like, I don't think they need another skill player. Like, I think they're fine. You know what I mean? Like, yes, they could get one, but, like, this is a deep receiver. This is a deep draft for receivers. And I know a lot of people are going to say, get somebody to put them opposite Garrett Wilson or go sign Mike Williams. That'd be fine. You know, but I think, like, at 10, if you're them, you're looking at, how do we make sure that the offensive line is not a problem this year? And Tyron Smith's on a one-year deal. Morgan Moses is in a contract year. So, like, tackle is going to continue to be a question for them. So, like, I think this might be just the first phase of the plan with more to come in the draft.
It really does open up their flexibility. I do think they need, God, could you imagine if they traded up for Marvin Harrison? Wouldn't that be cool?
Well, he and Garrett know each other.
I know. Or even
reunited. Well, not, I guess technically not really, because they didn't play together. Yeah, but Marvin was around for like bowl practices that year, I think. So
maybe like Malik Nabers or something like that. Golly, wouldn't that be fun? They do need, though. I do think,
well, we know what the owner would want,
right? I mean,
the owner doesn't want an offensive lineman.
I know. It's going to be like Jerry Jones and Johnny Manziel. Like, someone's going to be slapping the phone out of his hands to try to get.
Yeah, but I don't know if Woody's got a Stephen Jones in the room. You know what I mean? Like, because Stephen was the one who, like, basically talked his dad out of Johnny and said, no, Zach Martin, who, like, wound up being like a Hall of Famer.
It's a decent pick. Yeah.
Stephen Jones was the one in that room who was like, said, no, Jerry, we can't do that. We got to take this, like, potential Hall of Famer over here.
Oh my gosh. But I it did. And I think that as as much as Joe Douglas is in the crosshairs here, I think he's done a good job. I mean,
yeah.
The problem is, though, right?
The win-loss record is the problem, because it's like hard not to look at that, you know?
The win-loss record's the problem, and obviously your median age, right, of your offensive line. Not your median age, but you have a lot of like 34-year-old guys, and you have to assume that probably two-thirds of them aren't going to be here at the end of the season. So it is the perfect time to draft a tackle, have him learn from Morgan Moses, have him learn from Tyron Smith. I mean, my God.
And you have to have insurance for Tyron, too. I mean, like, he's a great player. Like, he's another one who's maybe in the Hall of Fame, right? Like, if
I don't think there's a question. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like he's probably a Hall of Famer. But, like, can you count on him to play 16 games or 17 games? Yeah. I'm still adjusting to that. I don't know if you can count on him to play 17 games.
That's
kind of sad, isn't it? Like, me becoming my dad here, it's like I can't stop saying 16 games. It's like my dad couldn't stop saying Baltimore when we were talking about the Colts when I was a kid.
Oh. The worst one now is obviously the Chargers? Old Commanders nickname.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And
the Chargers are bad, too. Like, I still talk to a lot of NFL people who refer to them as San Diego.
San Diego. What percentage of your friend group that has no personal investment in football still calls the Commanders by their old name?
I don't really think I have many.
Mine is like 95%. And it's not like, it's not out of... I'm talking about my
by mistake.
I'm not saying like these people are like woohoo. Like I'm gonna.
Well, it was such
yell
a sloppy
that, you know?
Transition. Like it was such a sloppy transition. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that. It was just, and it was amid like everything else that was going on there. Like they kind of changed the name as like a shield against like the complete firestorm that their old owner was under. You know what I mean? Like if you remember, that was happening. Like. It was like all the sexual harassment stuff and everything else was coming out. And it was like, hey, look over here. We're changing the name, you know? So that's probably part of the problem.
Yeah. What I would like to tell you my favorite signing of free agency.
Okay.
And I would like you to tell me your favorite signing of free agency.
Okay.
And so I did a free agency bold predictions post, which like, you know, we talked about my track record with Jason Light, obviously, that would make me a little bit nervous to just start going out and predicting things again. But I think I did okay. This time around, one of them that was nestled in there was that I think DJ Reader is going to end up being the signing of the offseason. I said all along that the Bengals weren't going to keep him. And I had heard that Lou Anarumo was like, please do not let this guy walk out the door. And I don't think
which is a good sign. Which is a good sign. Yeah.
And
that's a good place he went to.
Right. And like, I think Detroit, that like, is...
With that D-line.
If you're talking about like a move that can get you from like the hump that you could do in free agency. Mm-hmm. That's the one move that I'm talking about where it's like DJ Reader puts the Lions over the edge. And I think that he will be more impactful as a free agency signing than 90% of the other guys.
I like that one. I think, yeah, I mean, it can be a multiplier too for guys like Ole McNeil that are on the team already,
yep.
You know, like where you have like a guy who, again, a third contract guy who's, you know, a grizzled vet who is going to be able to bring a lot to that room. And so, like, yeah, like you absolutely want Aiden Hutchinson and Liam McNeil and the young defensive linemen they have there around DJ Reader. I like it. I like the Giants trade for Brian Burns. And I know that's not a signing, but like, and normally I'm not like a big top of the market free agent guy. In fact, like, I think this year was probably had more pitfalls than most because like the top level of free agency was so thin that you had people kind of wildly throwing money at it. But you know, I just like look at the way that let's remove the Daniel Jones hysteria and the Saquon Barkley hysteria from the whole thing, okay? And like, let's actually like drill down and look at what Joe Shane and Brian Daboll are actually building, okay? And look at the lines of scrimmage. Andrew Thomas, Evan Neal, Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau. Now, all those guys aren't exactly where you need them to be yet. Evan Neal certainly needs to develop, right? Like, and Kayvon Thibodeau isn't there yet. all those guys are 26 and younger. All those guys play on the line of scrimmage. And I think as you sort of dig through this and you look at it, it's like they gave up a second and a fifth for him. They already have a spare second, which is what they got for Leonard Williams, right? And this was a guy who, like, the Rams offered 2 ones and a three for him, what, 16 months ago, 17 months ago? And that whole premise I used with Daniil Hunter, he's been the number one rusher. Like, he's the number one rusher in Carolina, basically the balance of his career.
Right.
So now you're bringing him in, and he's used to the extra attention. He's used to the double teams and the slides and the chips and all that different stuff. And now you're putting him opposite Kayvon Thibodeau. That's going to make Thibodeau better. And those two are going to make Dexter Lawrence better. And so, like, I just sort of look at, you know, it's weird because the Giants, like especially playing in that market, like, you know, like the big headline names, like, they get so much attention. And where's the receiver? And what are you doing with Saquon? And, like, what happened with Daniel Jones? And are they going to trade up for a quarterback? Which I think is possible. But, you know, what I see right now those guys doing is, like, laying a really solid foundation on the lines of scrimmage. And so I think the Burns signing or the Burns trade is sort of a finishing piece to what their core is going to look like on the offensive and defensive lines going forward.
That's a good one. I do think that they are probably the most transformed as a team coming out of free agency because, again, you have a force multiplier, right, with, yep, with someone like Brian Burns. And I do think that the Giants are probably the one team that after free agency, I went from being like, oh boy, to being like, okay, they could very easily stumble into the playoffs this year.
Right.
And it wouldn't surprise me at all. So yeah, no, I really like that. I don't think there wasn't a ton of, I was surprised. I thought that the wide receiver market, kind of based on my reporting, was going to be a little bit more depressed than it was. I didn't think that Calvin Ridley was going to get 20 plus, and he did. That surprised me a little bit. And I thought that the Patriots, just based on kind of some early conversations I was having at the combine, were going to go a little more bananas than they ended up going.
Bananas.
Yeah. But
I don't know if there's like a regional dialect you're flashing there.
It's more like, I have kids right now. We're in the wheelhouse where my son's favorite song is Apples and Bananas. Do you know that song? You know, and then you say,
yeah, it's been a while for me, but yeah, I think so.
Apples and Bananas. And so, yeah, I thought the Patriots were going to go Bananas, and they ended up kind of not. But other than that, I mean, I didn't cover
the receiver. I think the receiver thing too with Ridley was interesting. Like, one thing that was interesting to me about Ridley was kind of what, it's like Tennessee, I feel like they're accelerating things on offense to get an answer on Will Levis because they know, like, if it's not him, then they're going to have to figure that out after this year, right? So they go and they get Tony Pollard, they go and they get Lloyd Cushenberry, and they go and they go over the top to get Calvin Ridley. The one thing that will worry me about Ridley is he turns 30 later this year.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, like, I think he's a good player. Is he a $23 million player?
I don't know. I was shocked.
That was a lot. That's a lot. Like, I thought he'd get close to 20. I didn't see 23 coming. And I think part of it was that the Patriots did drive that market. You know, Jacksonville was, you know, and I think you give Jacksonville some credit for, like, not just sitting on their hands because they could have gotten caught here, but they go out and get Gabe Davis and Devin Duvernay just to make sure, like, they're going to be okay at that spot. And so it's not, like, catastrophic when they lose Ridley. But, the Patriots sort of drove that market up, and then Tennessee comes in over the top. And I got the feeling he wanted to stay in the South, and the no state income tax thing was a factor. And I think it was just, in the end, probably more palatable, the idea for him and his family to move to Nashville than to move up here to Siberia.
Grade me real quick. This is the last thing we're going to do coming out of here. I'm going to bring up my free agency predictions. Let's give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down here.
Okay.
First one was the
New Shelby. Maybe we can use some. I could use your help on that. Maybe we can get some graphics with that.
Bum, 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 bum. get your thumbs down ready. So the first one was New England Patriots will spend big money in free agency. I mean, how are we defining big money? I mean,
I mean, I don't mind what they did though, like, because they did spend a lot, like, but it was all to re-sign their own guys, and it was, you know, I mean, look, one of my favorite signings of free agency was KJ Osborne.
I did love the KJ Osborne signing.
I couldn't believe they got him for 1 year, $4 million. I thought that was crazy. Like, he's clutch. Like, there's like a, you know, I always think like with free agents, it's like, show me the reason why the guy's a free agent, right? Like, that's,
he stopped blocking in Minnesota.
It's the first thing, yeah. But I mean, one of the big reasons like he was a free agent is because they already have Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. So it's like easy to explain that one away. New England's strategy is interesting to me because they have so many holes. And I think what Elliott Wolf and Gerard Mayo were trying to do was, let's get ourselves to a competent level. And that's not going to excite anybody, but like, let's get ourselves to the point where we can field a competent football team. So when we get to the draft, we can just take the best players.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's ever a bad strategy, you know?
No.
Like, just get to the point where you're not like going into the draft and being like, oh my God, we need a left tackle, or oh my God, we need a receiver. Like, I think the whole idea there was, let's get ourselves in a position where we don't need to force anything when we get to the draft.
Yeah. The second one here, the Bears will come away with a big receiver and more. Okay.
Boom. Thumbs up.
I
thumbs
think that
way up.
All right.
Yeah, he did well there.
Number three, the wide receiver market's going to be depressed. Specifically, Calvin Ridley, I don't think will get $15 million.
Other than that, you did okay.
$20 million. Yeah, I said...
Other than that, you did okay, though, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, like, if, again, KJ Osborne is signing for $4 million, if Mike Williams is still, like, KJ Osborne last year is,
I mean, Beckham's still out there. Tyler Boyd, I believe, is still out there, right? Like,
yeah.
Hollywood Brown got $7 million. Curtis Samuel got a nice deal, huh?
Okay, so I think I did all right.
Yeah, no, you did good. Like, I think in this category, like, the fact that Odell Beckham and Tyler Boyd and guys like that are still out there is 100% like proof that the market isn't great. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be out there.
And they're definitely not getting big contracts at this point, because a lot of the cap has already been allocated, you know.
And how would you how do you think the draft class affected all of that? Because I think it did.
Deep draft class. Okay, this one I liked. Chris Jones will get $30 million per year or more.
It's a big thumbs up too there, Connor. Now you're on a roll.
What was that 31.7? I think.
I think that's what it was. I don't have it in front of me. I think it was 95/3, right?
Yeah. So I think it was like it was like five.
It was something over, whatever it was, over five. But the relevant years was 95/3, and that was well over 30.
Yeah. The next one, which I also feel good about, Kirk Cousins' deal won't be fully guaranteed. So,
and it was not.
That was good, right? We did okay there. Jason Light, I just want to make sure he's listening to this. So we do get them right sometimes. Number six was the Indianapolis.
Any Baker Mayfield predictions in there to
yes. Okay.
Slam in his face?
So we're getting there. Okay. Six, Indianapolis will be somewhat active, but they won't make a splash. I think. I would
keep your powder dry on that one. Like, I think
you think
like they're one of the teams that's talked to the Chiefs about L'Jarius Sneed.
So you think that could still be happening?
Like, I think that's I'm not saying it will, but it could. It's in play.
I had heard from about the Colts in particular during the combine. One of the things that you know, a lot of people were talking about were just this idea that like they think their roster is a lot better than maybe some other people do.
Well, that was reflected in what they did, though, because they re-signed a bunch of guys.
All their
they
own
re-signed
guys. Yeah.
Pittman, Grover Stewart, Kenny Moore, right? Like, they took care of their own, which is, again, like, I don't mind that strategy. And those guys are good players. Like, those three are... Now, I think they overpaid a little for Pittman, which was a result of franchising him. But, like, those three guys are pretty good players.
Yeah. This one, the Titans will attempt a full-on makeover with...
Oh, and Zaire Franklin, that's the other one we shouldn't forget.
Franklin. Yeah, yeah.
Zaire Franklin was the other one.
The Titans will attempt a full-on makeover with character at the forefront. I heard at the combine they were looking for big character guys. Making Calvin Ridley the... And I'm not saying Calvin Ridley has poor character. I'm just saying, like...
He doesn't...
But making him the centerpiece of your free agency class is kind of... We're going to do, like, a thumbs three-quarters of the way down. On that one.
I mean, I don't think Calvin Ridley's a bad guy, but, you know, like
were suspended for a year for gambling. So
yeah, he was. So like from a character perspective, like it at least raises questions.
Sure.
Again, we're not assailing his character, but it does raise questions. Can't be your poster boy if that's the if that's going to be the theme of free agency.
Okay, so this one I thought I did nail. The Daniel Jones and Geno Smith contracts will loom large. I think that when the rub on Baker was that I think that maybe on one side of the ping pong table you had, oh, Baker is Geno Smith. So that's right. The deal that you're getting because it's the same thing. And then on the other side of the table, it's like, no, Baker's better than Daniel Jones. And so we want that deal, right? And okay. They ended up kind of settling in the middle, which I did think was, I thought that was prescient, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll give myself a thumbs medium on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because I do think, like, to some degree, like, the NFL has been fumbling around trying to figure out, like, the B-level quarterback contract for years now.
Yeah.
Right? Like, no one's going to question the Bengals for paying Joe Burrow $55 million a year. Nobody's going to question the contract adjustment that the Chiefs gave, you know, Patrick Mahomes. No one's going to question these things. And if you have a great one, you pay him whatever. Josh Allen, same thing, right? Justin Herbert, same category. It's that B-level contract that I think for over a decade now, the NFL has really had to grapple with, going from that era where, you know, whatever, I think almost 10 years ago now, the highest paid quarterback was always just the last one paid. So like at one point, Derek Carr was the highest paid guy. At one point, Garoppolo was the highest paid guy. We've now moved past that. And I think since then, like the league has really struggled with, you know, how do you slot a guy like Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, it's tough.
And Geno for that matter too.
But there's going to be a lot more of those guys, you know, there's going right. like that is going to become the norm, I think. Someone should write a story about that. And so for my last one, and I think I nailed this one, we are going to get through free agency absolutely gobsmacked by Dallas's complete and total inaction.
Oh, that's a home run right there.
Right? I am completely, you know, Jerry Jones is all in, no shot, bro. And wait until they don't sign Dak Prescott.
Right.
Watch what happens when they don't sign Dak Prescott. Because can you imagine what he's going to get in unrestricted free agency?
I know.
Deshaun Watson got a fully guaranteed contract. If Dak Prescott gets out there?
This is the problem, Connor. This is the problem with making your
Dak Prescott could make $75 million a year.
And I love Jerry, but this is the problem with your owner being available every week in the locker room and having like multiple radio spots every week is he's going to say a lot of things. And one of those things happened to be that they're all in.
So now
in an offseason where you're going to have to pay Dak Prescott, you're going to have to pay CeeDee Lamb. And my guess would be Micah Parsons is going to start to rattle cages about getting his own contract. Like, I mean, those three, how much are those three going to cost combined? I mean, Dak asked for at least 50, right? At least.
Well, no, if you're Dak, you reset the market, right?
Right. So it's at least 50. You're in the 50s somewhere if you're Dak, right? Then if you're CeeDee Lamb, you probably, maybe you wait for Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson breaks that glass ceiling into the 30s for receivers, you would think. And then Micah Parsons is going to ask for more than Nick Bosa got last year. And Bosa got what? Or was this 2 years ago now? Or last year? Last year, right? All meshes, all blends together for me. Last year, he got $34 million per. So we're talking about what? Let's say if it's 55, 30, 35, and that's conservative, you're talking about three players at, what, $120 million?
55, 30... 35, 120. Yeah. And with Dak, right? I mean, Joe Burrow has the average annual value leader right now at 55. You have to imagine Prescott's at least 55.5. You know, right. But Dak likes to do the short, you know, Dak likes to do the shorter term deals. He likes to come up more in free agency. Golly. Yeah. And
then CD, I mean, again, like, I think I was being conservative with those numbers, but you know, you're talking about probably like if you average it out, like $40 million a piece, right? With Dak being higher than that, and maybe CeeDee and Micah being like slightly lower than that. And maybe they try to slow play it with Micah Parsons, but then does that create a problem, you know, where you've got like Aaron Donald style holdout there, you know,
if you let CeeDee go unsigned until after Justin Jefferson does his deal, you're out of your mind.
Yeah, they should. I mean, if I were them, I would have been, I would have been like, let's do it now.
You need to do all of these now. Like, yeah. Tua Tagovailoa is going to get the Daniel Jones deal. He's going to get something close to the Daniel Jones deal.
You know what it is that these owners, and I'm just telling, it's the owners want to keep the money in their pocket for the extra 6 months.
That's crazy. What it is.
And they wind up killing themselves because of it. Like, when was the last time you saw that actually work? Where it's like, oh yeah, we'll wait till July or August. Well, at that point, the player's pissed. The market's gone up. And, you know, like, you're going to wind up with a worse result. You're going to wind up paying more money and having to deal with, like, the acrimony in training camp. Like, so, like, that's why I thought the Eagles were smart last year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they paid a lot for Jalen Hurts, and maybe that looks bad in the long run, but if you were going to pay him, then, you know, it made sense to go before Herbert and Burrow went. It just made, because, like, Burrow and Herbert were always going to, in all likelihood, we're going to get more, you know? So, yeah. The idea of waiting so you can keep your money and your investments and everything else for an extra 6 months, I always think is very, very short-sighted. But it happens. There's no question it happens.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Dallas is going to burn down. And that'll be fun. I mean, it's fun. It'd be fun for me to watch, you know?
Well, Dallas is, you know, Dallas is always entertaining, so...
Possibly by design, but Jerry Jones breaking, not all in. Albert and I are all in. I mean, gosh, we filmed a free agency pod on the highway. I could have been pulled over, but I did that for you guys.
This was a layup compared to that one.
This was a layup. I hope you guys liked it too. Matt and Gilberto will be on Thursday, and I, you know, give those guys a read. They were up. I mean, just, you know,
did a great job.
I was out in LA. I was like, Gilberto, come and party with me. And he's like, nah, dude, I gotta be upgrading free agency moves until the wee hours of the night. So give those guys a follow. Give their work a read. They did an awesome job throughout free agency. And give their show a listen on Thursday. And we'll be back next week. Probably
maybe pivoting to the draft.
I know.
Next week,
we're gonna be talking about quarterbacks. Here we go.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.